Let me see if I can get Ken Timmerman to these microphones so that we can talk about geopolitical activities that are unfolding in our world. Ken, let me ask the very first question. I think it's very important. There's a report coming out from the United States intelligence community that Iran can now build and deliver a nuclear weapon of mass destruction.
This is an interesting development, to say the least, when you have a political intelligence community in the United States that has shied away from calling a spade for a number of years. I believe the Iranians have had this capability, at least to produce the weapon, for a number of years. But as the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, told the Senate earlier this week, it remains a question of political will, whether they've actually produce the weapons and whether they will unveil them. Interestingly, one of the things he told the Senate in this annual report, it's called the Worldwide Threat Assessment, it's delivered every year, usually in February, this one's a little bit early. Interestingly, he said that Iran's developments in missiles had come to such a point that they could produce and deliver a nuclear warhead on top of a missile, should they decide to do so. Now, that is actually new information. I think that is a new assessment from the intelligence community, and it shows you just how bad things have gotten with Iran.
You know what's interesting? They now have a nuclear warhead with a delivery system as well. This does make it threatening. Well, in that same meeting with Clapper, the head of intelligence, he made the statement that serious chemical weapons and the destruction of them has been delayed, and the United States is much concerned about that.
Let me just make clear, though, so there's no ambiguity with our listeners. Clapper was talking about capability, not actual weapons. He wasn't saying that they'd already produced weapons. He was saying that they now had the capability to produce weapons. And it's perhaps a distinction without a difference, because most analysts don't believe it would take them that long to produce a warhead should they decide to. But he seems to believe also that the international community would detect any breakout by the Iranians from the agreement they have. I am less sanguine about that. On Syria, he said that they are slow in enforcing the agreement to deliver their chemical weapons for destruction. It's interesting. I mean, I happen to think that they made this agreement last September, and now it's January, and they've already started to make the first two deliveries, the first two shipments of chemical weapons precursors to the United States and then to these international warships that are going to destroy them off out at sea. I think that's actually pretty quick, and they may be a couple of weeks behind schedule, but the fact that they've actually made those two initial deliveries of chemical warfare agents and their precursors, I think it's pretty extraordinary and one of the rare positive developments I can see in the region.
The State of the Union message given by President Obama, of course, this last week, he made the statement that he's ready and will veto any new Iranian sanctions, and this is causing many to say he's not really ready to try to stop the Iranians from going nuclear.
I agree with that assessment, and I found his description of the temporary agreement, to this interim agreement with the Iranians, very troubling, because he said at the State of the Union, he said that Iran has, quote, begun to eliminate its stockpile of higher levels of enriched uranium, and that is simply not true. They're not eliminating it. They are diluting the 20% enriched uranium and keeping it. So it's still there in Iran, and at any time they can re-enrich it, and most estimates that I've seen suggest that this would be a matter of days for them to do so. So they have eliminated nothing, and the Iranians themselves, the Foreign Minister Javad Zarif has come out and said very, very clearly, he said, you know, we are not destroying anything. We are not taking anything apart. We are simply not enriching above 5% any longer. So we have to look at what the Iranians are saying, and I'm pretty disturbed that the President of the United States would so mischaracterize this agreement to make Americans believe that they're safe when they're not.
And he did it in public there at the speech to the State of the Union message he was giving to everybody. Well, here's a different look at something happening in the Middle East. Seems that Tayyip Erdogan made a state visit to Iran, met with President Rouhani there, and now it looks like these two countries, Turkey and Iran, are forming some kind of alliance. What do you know about this?
Well, this is an on-again, off-again relationship a while back. You and I had a discussion a couple years ago when I was on the border of Iran and northern Iraq at the time when the Iranians and the Turks were conducting joint bombardments of the Kurds in northern Iraq. So they have had a strategic relationship in the past. They have engaged in joint military operations against the Kurds in the past. They have come at odds recently over Syria, where the Iranians are supporting the Syrian regime and the Turks are supporting the opposition. But there are long-standing commonalities of interest between Iran and Turkey, the two regimes. They have some rivalry, but we see here in this visit by Erdogan and his invitation for the Iranian president to come to Turkey that they're trying to sort of patch over those differences, make a lot of money together now that the U.S. sanctions on Iran are being suspended. This has got the Undersecretary of the Treasury, who was in Turkey just before Erdogan left, warning, he's telling Turkish companies, don't rush to get involved in Iran yet. We haven't lifted these sanctions permanently. It's just a temporary fix. Clearly the Turks feel see money on the waters.
See money on the waters. That's absolute. You know, it's interesting in our conversations, Ken, we talk about Iran and Turkey, Iran and Syria, but there's new news coming out of Iraq that Iraq and the Iranians are plotting a revolution, an oil revolution, to try to challenge Saudi Arabia in their control of OPEC and their power in the petroleum product world in the Middle East.
Well, that's right. The Saudis today are the swing producer. They produce between 9 and 10 million barrels per day of crude oil, which is an awful lot. The Iraqis, after the liberation in 2003, were struggling to produce a million and a half, then 2 million. Today, they're up to 3 million barrels a day, and they would like to go to treble that, to triple their capacity to 9 million barrels a day. They have the resources to do so. They have certainly the oil in the ground to do so. It is easily exploitable oil. The Iraqis are blessed with that. And what they need to do is make the investments both in their oil export capacity and their terminal. They have an oil export terminal on the Persian Gulf. And to rebuild some of their pipelines, both domestically and to get their oil to Syria. So that's going to require quite a bit of investment, but it is definitely not out of their reach.
Talk to me about the ex-president of the Ukraine making a warning to not only the Ukrainians but the world that the Ukraine is on the brink of civil war. Could that actually happen?
The situation there is really has really degraded dramatically over the past couple of weeks. The Ukrainian parliament has outlawed protests, and Yanukovych, the president, the current president, has threatened all kinds of dire and dramatic things to protesters. He's taken people out and had them stripped naked in the middle of the night, sub-zero weather, and really, really treated them quite brutally. Leonid Kuchma, who was the first president, has said that this is getting out of hand and things could, go into a civil war should Yanukovych not kind of loosen up and realize it's his own people he's beating up.
You know, this world is in bad shape, is it not, Ken? We talk about all these different sections of the world, regions, but you don't seem to have a positive report because there don't seem to be any positive reports out there.
Well, I have that one positive note on the Syrians giving up their chemical weapons, but you're right. On the larger issues, there are a lot of very dire things happening. There's a struggle inside of Islam between Sunni and Shiite Islam, which we've seen erupt from time to time. It erupted during the Iran-Iraq War, 1980 to 1988. That tends to lead to great bloodshed in the region. Strategically, it is not necessarily a danger or a threat to the United States or to Israel, but you know, we're sitting here and watching this, and you're seeing all these people die as a result of it. It's not a pleasant thing to be observing.
Yes, it is not. But it is one of the reasons that Ken Timmerman is brought to these microphones on a weekly basis. He's in Washington, D.C. His vantage point to the world is very effective as he stays on top of these geopolitical activities. Ken, thank you so very much, my good friend, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Jimmy, and I hope you will be rested up and better by next week. God bless.